Hi, welcome to another episode of the Live Your Full Potential podcast. It's been a few weeks since we've released an episode, and this is a special episode because it's someone that has been in my life for almost two decades. I've told people many times that when I started my career as a coach, one of the things that really changed for me was going from selling my time to creating products and services around myself as a personal brand. And the person that is the catalyst for me going on this journey is a gentleman named Daniel Priestley, who has become a very dear friend of mine over many years, has become a great supporter. I do my best to support him by sharing his books with my clients and students and his program called KPI, Key Person of Influence, which was a massive shifter for me. And like many times over the last few years, I've asked Daniel to show up for my community, and he always says yes if he has the time or the space in his diary. I asked Daniel to speak in my mastermind, a current mastermind of like-minded business leaders that are looking to achieve their goals. Daniel came in, as always, just spit wisdom and truth and inspiration, talking about trends for 2024, talking about how businesses are shifting, talking about AI and why you have to be at the front because you're already behind, so you want to be as close to it and as in front as you can be by really, really going all in on studying AI and doing it yourself, getting your teams to do it, getting people around you to study AI, because it's like the internet. It's not, you know, do I want to use the internet or not? It's coming. It's coming. It's just a matter of whether you're going to be even more behind or whether you're going to start investigating and exploring with AI. And then lastly, Daniel speaks about the power of having a personal brand and why this is way more important than having a professional brand or a business brand. And he gives some really good examples of this that you can use for evidence to actually support this belief that you need to have a personal brand. My clients and students absolutely love this conversation, and therefore I turned it into a podcast episode. So without further ado, here we go. Here is the recording from our masterminding session with our guest expert speaker, Mr. Daniel Priestley.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm always grateful to spend time with you because we almost lost you. And for a while there, it was touch and go. We really did think we were going to lose you. How many years ago was that?
Four
years ago, right? So yeah, I remember it very vividly. So it was a very emotional moment for me when you came and walked up my driveway. I think you were high on drugs, but you still came and walked up.
I was on morphine,
and just to be clear, it was painkillers. But you managed to walk up there. You know, one of the fun things that we did when JP had his accident is that while he was still in hospital, I booked him for a speaking engagement to come and tell the story of his
stretch
recovery.
Goal.
So I put down a payment, a speaking fee in the bank, and I said, this is a pre-booking. I know that JP's value is about to go through the roof after he tells this story of what's happened to him and how he recovered. So let me be the first one to book a speaking engagement, which was a fun thing to do at the time, especially because deep down we didn't know whether he was going to be able to make it through.
It was
pretty wild. So let's talk about a few different things. I'm going to start high level and then kind of work my way down, and we'll end up doing some stuff on the fly piece. How long do you want me to talk for, JP?
Up to an hour, that's okay, or 45
yeah,
minutes.
Cool. So finish up around 1 o'clock.
Amazing. Thank you so
okay,
much.
Okay, so let's just talk about two interesting things about the year 2024. So the two things I want to mention about 2024 is, number one, demographics, number two, technology. So the first thing to know about 2024 is that there's a massive demographic shift that's occurring in the economy, where the biggest powerhouse, the biggest engine of the economy, called the baby boomers, are pretty much officially retired from 2024 on. They're born 1946 to 1964, and everything the baby boomers have ever touched has boomed. So in the 60s, they boomed music, and they created the Beatlemania and Rolling Stones and all that sort of stuff. and they created these massive music trends. Then in the 70s, they wanted used cars and they boomed used cars, and you couldn't get yourself a used car. And if you were a used car salesman, you made millions of dollars. And then in the 80s, they boomed stocks and shares, and they boomed houses, and they boomed interest rates, and they boomed home electronics. And essentially, as the baby boomers move through their lives, they just keep booming stuff, right? That's actually how they're known. They show up all at once, right? Because basically, the way the baby boomers were created was in 1946, the World War II had ended, the soldiers came back from war and started families. They had babies. The parents who had lost a child in war decided to have another child during that time. And the children who had grown up during the war made the decision that when they were old enough, they were going to have kids as young as and as fast as possible. So essentially, you had lots of people having children. And it was also a moment in time where they survived, right? So it was you could have big families and they would all have they'd all survive. So there was this big baby boom in the US and UK and Australia and all of these places. So when they all retire, that is a major thing that's going to happen. And it's happening at the moment that the baby boomers are hitting this particular age. And essentially the economic engine is turning off, right? These people are never going to take out another large debt. They're not going to have any more mortgages. They're not going to have any more major business loans. All of that's completely ended. And if you know anything about the economy, it's all debt driven. So this is a massive turning point, massive change that's happening. Why should you care about this? Well, one of the things that baby boomers do is that they decide that they want to retire and semi-retire, and they want to hand over their businesses. And for every five boomers that are retiring, there's only two people in the at a similar level who are in the economy. So there's a big group of people retiring and a small group of people who can take over the economic output that the boomers have. So imagine this. Imagine you've got a business that does $500,000 of revenue. Imagine that you could actually double your business from $500,000 to $1 million just by having one lunch with the right person, where you sit down over lunch and you agree that if that person wants to retire, they send all the business over to you, you take on their business, and you pay a commission to them for the next 5 years or 6 years or whatever it is, right? And rather than having to do TikTok dancing, rather than having to shake your ass on Instagram, you actually just simply have a meeting with a baby boomer who wants to retire, and you agree a deal, right? And they agree that you're a key person of influence in the industry. You're a safe pair of hands. You're a trusted person. You now are in a position where you can literally double your business without any faff, any nonsense. You can just have a conversation and grow the business. I personally have a client who inherited his father's business, which was doing $800,000 a year. And he immediately went and spoke to his father's friend who wanted to retire, who had a business doing $4 million a year, did a deal, a no money down deal, and basically within two decisions ended up with $4.8 million clothing and apparel business, very profitable, but just took it over. So no marketing spend, no Facebook ads, none of that. Just had to convince them that he was the right person to take that over. So trend number one to just keep in mind of is this idea that we are going through a massive transfer of wealth. There's this huge transfer of wealth that's happening globally. Economically, the baby boomers, the top 10% of baby boomers have 65% of all the wealth. So the 10% of baby boomers have 2/3 of the wealth. So all of that's about to shift and it's about to change, and the nature and the dynamics of that is really going to change. And there's a huge amount of opportunities in that. But that is predicated on you being seen as a key person of influence. You've got to be seen as a key person of influence in order for that to happen. Trend number two is technological. So technological trend is artificial intelligence. And AI has been around actually since as long as the baby boomers. It was actually a post-war discussion. So after World War II, and you had Alan Turing and the code breakers and all this sort of stuff, there was all these people who believed that one day computers could actually solve any problem. And they coined the phrase artificial intelligence back like 50 years ago, at least. And nothing happened. Well, when I say nothing happened, very narrow things happened. Small things happened. Calculators happened. Excel spreadsheets happened. Weather apps happened. All these kind of little narrow things happened and happened. But then a year ago, something big happened, and artificial intelligence crossed a threshold, and it crossed a threshold called a general purpose technology. A general purpose technology means something that impacts everything. So an example of a general purpose technology would be the internet. An example of a general purpose technology would be combustion engines, electricity, steam engines, books, actually publishing print press. The printing press was a general purpose technology. So all throughout history, the world changes when you get a new general purpose technology. So internet gets invented, everything's going to change around the internet. Publishing gets invented, everything will change as a result of publishing. So what happened is that a year ago, artificial intelligence went from being a narrow technology that impacted the narrow thing that you threw a dart at. So if you were trying to create a chess algorithm, it could, yeah, you could focus on chess, but it couldn't do anything other than chess. So that's not a general purpose technology, that's a specific purpose technology. But then a year ago, it crossed the line and became a general purpose technology. And that is a fundamental shift that's as big as internet or combustion engines or electrification or that sort of stuff. So what does it mean in practice? What it means is that every industry horizontally, every industry will have to reorganize itself in a post-AI world. And every vertical, every level of every industry, from the CEO to the person at the very beginning, from the junior to the CEO, their job is going to change because of a general purpose technology. So imagine horizontally and vertically, everything has to change when you get a general purpose technology. So you're going to get something that totally transforms everything, transforms the way coaches coach, transforms the way leaders lead, it transforms the way consultants do consulting, transforms the way construction companies do construction. So every single industry at every single level will be impacted by this general purpose technology called AI. So what happens with this is that you have early adopters and laggards, and it used to be that you had a good 10 to 20 years to decide whether you wanted to kind of get it onto a trend or not. But unfortunately, this stuff happens so fast
Was.
that we're not talking about like 10 years, 20 years. We're talking about early adopters are now and late adopters are next year, right? Like, or 2025. So you really like 2023 was the year that we all kind of got to look at it and go, oh, that's an interesting thing and that's fascinating. I wonder how it's going to work. 2024 is really, it's you're either imagine a group of people who go to a racing track and there's all these sports cars. And they kind of spend about an hour letting you see the sports cars, having a look around the sports cars, seeing what they're capable, what they can do. And then they say, okay, now go and pick a sports car, hop in the sports car and get out on the track and start doing laps and start racing. And imagine you go, oh, that's cool, but I'm just going to get lunch first. Right. So you go off and have lunch. By the time you're back, there's no way you can possibly catch all the people who just got into the sports car and started driving. Like you are now so far behind because the technology of a sports car, it gives such an awesome advantage to anyone who gets on it first. So essentially, you have to, this is one of those ones where it's kind of like drop everything and start thinking about this because ultimately, by the time we get to 2020, by the time we get to 2030, you will look back at this decade, and pretty much one of the biggest decisions you made will be how you responded to AI. So, when we get to the year 2030, we're going to sit there and go, the quality of your life, the quality of your house, your travel, your car, your business, all of those sorts of things, very much will be connected to how did you respond in 2024 to AI. That'll be a big thing, right?
Yeah, that's powerful, man. So basically what you're saying is look at every way that it doesn't matter what industry you're in, what horizontal, what vertical, look at every way you can leverage AI. I mean, not AI specifically, but related to AI. I
I would
said
say
to Lira,
there's some levels. Level one is you just use it in your daily life. So you've got the app on your phone, you've got the window open all the time. You're conversing with AI, you're coming up with methodologies, you're using it to extract your intellectual property, you're using it to create marketing materials, you're using it to structure your thinking, you're in conversation with AI pretty much every day. So that would be level one. Level two is that you train those people around you on how to prompt AI properly so that they can use AI to get more things done. So if you've got an assistant, they're trained in AI. If you've got anyone on your team, all of them know how to use AI in their role. And when I say AI, I mean, no, just the basic of ChatGPT is a good place to start, right? You don't have to go too wild. This is a great place to start. Level three is that you start creating AI-enabled products. So you start plugging AI into your product so that your customers are experiencing some sort of an AI-related solution from you. So for example, in the DENT program, the Key Person of Influence program, we have a portal. You put in all the information about yourself and it will go off and write the capstone pitch for you. It'll go and write your product architecture for you. It starts spitting out about 50 different assets. So all it needs to know is who's your target customer, what is it that you do, what's your origin story, a bit about you. And then it says, okay, here's all the ways you could monetize that. Here's a gold, silver, and a bronze version. Here's how you'd pitch that powerfully. Here's a introduction that you would give when you're on podcasts, etc. Yeah, JP.
I actually, I said to Lyra, my assistant, earlier this morning or last night, I said, go into ScoreApp, because we have it, but I've just, so much has been up and down and changing that we've not 100% gone in. First thing I said to her was go in and study it and look at all of the AI features and benefits and look at how we can absolutely max out our ROI. That's one thing. And the second thing, just because Cheryl said scary, Cheryl, I want to just speak to that for a second, if that's okay, Daniel. You know, yeah. Cheryl has one of the biggest supplement companies, health supplement companies in the UK and the world, Viridian Supplements or Viridian Nutrition. But imagine this, Cheryl. Imagine someone can go on your website and say, these are the things that I'm looking for. I want to feel this. I want to experience this. I want my skin to be like this, or my skin is oily, or these are the things that I'm experiencing right now. These are my symptoms. They can have a full-on conversation with AI on your website and say, based on our hour-long conversation, these are the top five supplements I recommend for you. That's correct.
To clarify, JP, I'm not scared of the technology.
Right.
I'm scared of the responsibility for my business. Clearly, my daughter's younger and she's coming into the business. I am very interested in AI. I'm on the edge of the baby boomers. I was born in 62 and my daughter's coming in. So what you described earlier was exactly my scenario. I have businesses that are worth a lot of money and we're not one of the biggest, JP, we're just one of the best. I employ 70 people in total. So, you know, but that's a lot of people. And that's a big responsibility. And, you know, whether it's putting in a new ERM system, you know, everything is about, you know, just making the right decision. I want to jump in that car straight away, Daniel, straight in there. And I'm going to get out on the racetrack immediately. But crying out loud, sorry, I need to swore. For crying out loud, I'm just concerned I've picked the wrong bloody car and I should have gone with the one that bloody Gavin picked, right? That's really frustrating. So that's what scares me, making the wrong decision too quick.
You know,
but
it's
you
all
delay it, you know. But anyway, that's so I'm not scared of technology generally. I embrace it.
Gotcha.
I'm scared of embracing the wrong one.
Amazing.
The little thing I'll say to all of you is all of you are exactly where you need to be right now. You've got a background with intellectual property, you've got stories, you've got experiences, you've got way more value than you realize because you're so close to it. And the truth is that you're so close to your own story, you're so close to your own business that it's easy for Cheryl to see Gavin's business and go, gee, I wish I was starting in that position. And Gavin's probably sitting there going, are you kidding? I'd rather be in your position, Cheryl. And the reason for that is because it's just easier to see someone else's value because it's at a distance. It's like when you go to an art gallery and you stand back from the painting and you take it all in, as opposed to having your nose on the canvas, which is where we are mostly with our businesses. We've got our noses on the canvas. We can't take in what it is we've got. What I need you to do in this year is deliberately block out time to step back from the canvas And that may mean physically traveling. It may mean getting in groups of people who are outside your industry. It might mean taking on a mentor who knows nothing about your business, who asks you stupid questions, because it's these types of things that help you to step back from the canvas. Whereas if you only talk to people in your industry, if you only talk to people in your business, if you only do the familiar, it's so easy to just keep that nose right up against the canvas and miss the, you know, miss the forest for the trees. I'm mixing my metaphors there, but you get the idea. Any other questions about the two things that I've talked about so far, this whole idea of boomers and tech, or in particular AI?
Well, I would love, before we pass on to anyone else, I'd love to ask what I asked you before, which is how relevant is the five P's still?
The five P's, yeah.
Because yes, you've got AI, but you still need to be able to pitch someone face to face.
So let me...
And everyone knows that products could not be yours. They could have just been created by AI. So do they still have the same leverage?
Exactly. So this has all been building up to that exact question, which is when we have leverage, we need a fulcrum. We need a spot to leverage from, right? So we need something that leverage rests on. And the only real thing that exists at the moment that's left is the leverage of personal brand. And you're now seeing that all of these AI professionals are going crazy building their personal brands, right? Their most prized asset is their personal brand. So the closer you get to AI with like CEOs of major companies who are doing the cutting edge thing, they're all writing books. They're all going and speaking at conferences. They're all active on social media. They know that the leverage point that exists right now, that is the almost one of the only leverage points that will survive AI, is the leverage point of being a trusted personal brand. Because in a world where all the content can be created by anyone, the only thing that gives it leverage in context is that it's coming from someone that you trust, that it's coming from like that. In a world where all the information's just like blaring out full speakers, it's the ability to get close to someone who you know, like, and trust that matters more than anything, because the content value falls to zero. It's the context value that goes through the roof. And it's the personal brand that provides the context, because the content is now free. We were all raised in a society in the last 50 years where we were told over and over and over and over again that knowledge work was the most valuable thing, that it's all about knowledge work, and that we have to, you know, the information economy. And the truth is that information and knowledge is that the price of information, knowledge, and creativity is now falling to zero. Consumers will happily consume all of their creativity needs for free, right? And they don't care. And if you offer them the opportunity to pay a small amount for it, in most cases, they just won't. So the knowledge and the information and the creativity and the entertainment, people now expect that to come for free. So that's called content. But the context is who's saying it. Who's the person who's talking about this? Do I trust them? Do I know them? Do I like them? Are they bringing together the right communities around them? And I want the image I want you to have in your mind is I want you to imagine the Eiffel Tower in Paris is this big focal point that draws people to Paris. But the point of going to Paris is not that you spend money on the Eiffel Tower itself. It's that you want to be around all the things that surround the Eiffel Tower, the art galleries, the restaurants, the hotels, the day spas, all of that stuff around the Eiffel Tower. Now, what I want you to imagine is that the new Eiffel Tower is the personal brand, right? So you're the Eiffel Tower for your business. People come to because they know you're in the city, but then they buy from all the things that are around you. They buy the books, the courses, they buy the extended intellectual property, they buy the products, they buy from the businesses that you're associated with. So you just see this metaphor of the Eiffel Tower versus the Parisian landscape. Think about Ryan Reynolds, the famous Hollywood actor, who has made $1 billion by not being a Hollywood actor recently. So he knows he's got the Eiffel Tower brand. So what he does is he puts around himself a football club, a gin brand, a payment technology company, a mobile phone technology company, and all of those things boom in value because his personal brand is connected to it, and that creates all the difference, right? Being a hotel that is close to the Eiffel Tower makes you worth like 10 times more than being an Eiffel Tower in the middle of nowhere. Oh, sorry, being a hotel in the middle of nowhere. So it's the ability to be close to a personal brand or to become the personal brand that totally transforms everything. So this personal brand thing is the fulcrum that all this leverage relies upon. You're only going to get one of those baby boomer deals, let's say, if you're perceived as a key person of influence in your industry. You're only going to get people responding to your AI-generated content if it has your endorsement attached to it, if it's endorsed by a key person of influence. So these trends, they need a leverage point, they need a focal point, and your personal brand is the leverage and the focus that makes everything work around. So what I'm going to talk about is how do we build that Eiffel Tower? All right, so the Eiffel Tower is built. How's your personal brand built? So the first thing is the way you speak. So the way you speak is the first thing that creates a personal brand. Now, there's a couple of different ways to speak. One of the ways to speak is the ability to speak so that other people are influenced by your words. So it's speaking with influence. It's the power to influence through what you're talking about. Now, imagine this as a scenario. Someone goes to bed and wakes up in the morning and they have absolutely no desire or interest to work on their fitness. They don't consider themselves to be an athlete. They don't consider themselves to have fitness goals. And then suddenly they hear JP speak and they go, oh, actually, I should consider myself an athlete. I should consider transforming my body. So they might just take that message from JP's talk. So in that example, he influences them to be something different. He influences them. They went to bed and woke up one way. They went to bed the following night a different way. So here's the funny thing, right? If I look at you all and I say, if you had the chance to spend 5 minutes sharing what it is you do, could you completely transform my thinking about something so that I go to bed tonight thinking about whatever it is you've got to say, right? Could you get me to think and behave differently in one conversation where genuinely, by the end of that conversation, I now think and behave differently? I have a completely different outlook and I'm going to behave based on that outlook. Now, if the answer is yes, what you did was you pitched something. And if the answer is no, then you just talk for the sake of talking, but you're not yet influencing, which is fine because that's what 95% of the population do anyway. They talk for the sake of talking, but they're not really influencing. We need to move to the 5% of the population who talk to influence. The reason they open their mouth is they want you to think differently and behave differently. And that's the reason they talk. They don't really talk unless that's the purpose. So the question I've got for you to start with is, what do you want people to think and do differently? Like if I had to, in the chat, first thing that comes to mind, I want you to write in the chat, what do you want me to think? How do you want me to think differently? What do you want me to do differently? Right? What is it you want me to think and do differently? If I go to bed tonight thinking differently or doing differently, what do you want me to think differently or do differently? Cheryl says, to ensure your health for the future, what kind of 60 to 70 year old do you want to be? Do you want to be a burden on your kids? Do you want to be vibrant? All right. So the idea here is that the decisions you make today have a massive impact on the type of 70 year old that you're going to be. And that you're... So I want to influence the way you behave today so that you end up being a vibrant, healthy, energizing force in your 70s. So Greg says, what your business and you are actually capable of, can I help you achieve your true potential? Way too vague. Need to sharpen that up, Greg. So we need to get super, super specific. I need to hear, when I hear what you say, I need to immediately go, oh, that's Greg. Right. So I want to, and by the way, I'm only being on the more critical side because I want you to get this right for 2024. I could give you a pat on the back, but actually I think the thing that adds value is to say, hey, let's fine tune this. So if I said to you, I know a person who what they want you to do is they want you to build a business that starts with a clear purpose and that can answer the question, why are you doing it in the first place? Why are you doing this in the first place? They want to build a culture built on something called the why. They want you to start with why. Now, who might I be talking about if I said, there's someone here who wants your business to exist, starting with the question called, why do you do this? Who do you think would start with why?
Simon Sinek.
Simon Sinek, right? So we know that he has gotten that so perfectly drilled in that we just know that if we're talking about a business built on purpose, that he's one of the first names that come up. That's what it means to be the key person of influence. So we actually, now Cheryl, if she's clever, she could actually own the concept of your decisions today need to reflect the person you want to become in your 70s, right? That is specific enough where there's only going to be a few names that come up. And if you start owning that, then people basically will go, oh, that's a cool conversation that I want to be part of. I'm going to go to that Eiffel Tower to be around all the things that are around that Eiffel Tower. So imagine that Cheryl says, I'm all about making powerful decisions today so that you are a force of nature in your 70s. That's the Eiffel Tower. And then it's like, oh, I want the supplements. I want the skincare. I want the exercise routine and the licensed personal trainers. And I want the app and I want the software and I want the podcast series. And it's like all the stuff that sits around that Eiffel Tower, that's what I want now that I know that that's the Eiffel Tower. So we're looking for that central message. Debbie, I want to influence you to buy your gifts from a company so you feel as good giving the gifts as the receiver feels in receiving the gifts. So that could be a powerful small business campaign or buying from a particular logo or kite mark. I think that there's something about that for sure. Could be fine-tuned. Mitch, I want you to stop drinking toxic water that you have at hand, and I want you to start drinking quality water that you can have in your own home and your family. Right, so nice, really clear. The quality of your water that's coming into your home is toxic, and we want to transform that. Right, so those are big ideas and big conversations. So it's good to see those. I want you to get so finely tuned that there's a few sentences that if I utter those sentences, people know it's you. Right, I want you to imagine just like Simon Sinek start with why. Right, it's like, oh, okay, cool. If I said the word modern stoicism, who do you think of when you think of modern stoicism?
Ryan Holiday.
Right, so two words, modern stoicism. If I said ancient stoicism, you're going to think of Marcus Aurelius, but Ryan Holiday is modern stoicism. So he's just gone and owned this space. When you hear the words become a key person of influence in your industry, hopefully you think, oh, there's a guy who wrote the book on that. I want to go and talk to this guy. So these are cornerstone ideas. I want you to have a cornerstone idea. I want you to have something that is a signature idea. And then once you've got a signature idea, I need you to learn how to pitch that powerfully. So pitching it powerfully means that you can structure your language in a way that people can be enrolled by it. They're enrolled in what you have to say. So I'll give you an example. We have a social pitch, and a social pitch is where you introduce yourself 30 seconds. And a great example is I own an IT services company, and I recently hired a new managing director, and we did a couple of introduction calls to a few of the clients, and I realized straight away that I'd done something wrong in not training him how to do a, his name is also Daniel, in how to do a "Hi, I'm Daniel" speech. And I stopped doing the calls and I gave him training on how to do a "Hi, I'm Daniel" speech, where he actually says, "Hi, I'm Daniel. I've worked in IT for this many years. I've worked on these types of projects. I've done this sort of thing. My passion is this. My vision for your company is this." And he actually knows how to structure a 30, 40 second introduction called a "Hi, I'm Daniel" speech. And everyone goes, "Oh, wow." So when we did the first two calls, there was no "oh, wow" moment. It was just like, "Hi, how are you going? I'm qualified in my SQL and Python and blah, blah, blah." And it was like, "Okay, cool." There was nothing special about it. So a social pitch means that you know how to introduce yourself so that people go, "Oh, wow." All right. So let me show you how to do it. Let's actually just do a practical exercise. JP, you'll need to let me have the full the share screen.
Yeah, coming up. So bad with this. Multiple participants. There you go. All right, it should be on. Good to go.
Nice. So here's what we've got, right? Name, same, fame, aim, and again. So your name, obviously, is your name and your company name. Your same is the most boring way of describing what you do, the way that you hate describing what you do. Right. So you might call yourself a life coach, or you might call yourself a managing director of a construction company that builds buildings, that builds commercial offices and warehouses, or a skincare range, or a vitamin supplement range of products, right? It's however you hate describing yourself, but it allows people to just open up the tab called, "Okay, I understand what that is." And then we go to fame. What makes you special or different? I've written a book. I've spoken in front of these audiences. We've won major awards. We've done $1 billion worth of projects. I've worked with celebrities and the biggest businesses and the biggest, most famous people in the world. I've won major awards. Whatever it is that makes you famous. And then your aim, what is it that you're focused on right now? And then your game, what is the bigger vision? And this creates a really powerful introduction. I'm Daniel Priestley. I'm the founder of Dent Global. We do training and development programs for entrepreneurs. I've written 5 best-selling books on entrepreneurship. I've spoken at Oxford and Cambridge University. I've won Entrepreneur of the Year and Scale Up Entrepreneur of the Year. We develop entrepreneurs who stand out, scale up, and make a positive impact in the world, because I believe that entrepreneurs have the power to use the entrepreneurial method to solve the world's biggest problems. So that was name, same, fame, aim, and a game. And it really only took about 20 seconds. Boom, 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 boom. So I want you to have a quick go at this. Now, you may not get this right, but at least you've got the framework there. Going into 2024, I want you to have a "Hi, I'm Andreas" speech, a "Hi, I'm Kate" speech, "Hi, I'm Dan," "Hi, I'm Derek," right? I want you to have a speech that makes people go, oh, I need to sit up and pay attention to what this person has to say, because they've given me the gift of understanding why I should listen, right? And I want you, I use specific language there. They've given me the gift of helping me to understand why I should listen to them. It's not for your benefit that you're saying who you are. It's for the person listening's benefit. That person lives in a noisy world. They don't have enough time to figure out whether they should listen to every single person they encounter. So the people that they like listening to are people where they go, oh, this person has given me the gift of helping me to understand why the hell I should listen to them. It's if they're not listening to you, it's not their fault. They live in a busy world, right? It's your fault for not giving them the gift of letting them know why, you know, why they should listen. Okay, let's talk about the next thing. You need to be publishing more. So the first P is pitching. Once you've got your pitch straight, you need to publish stuff that reinforces what you're going to be talking about. So Cheryl, I'm going to pick on Cheryl a bit because she was so good at her distinction of what she's about. Cheryl needs to be publishing content that shows A versus B, right? Isn't it interesting that this celebrity is 73 years old and this celebrity is 73 years old? This celebrity, you know, looks like they are, you know, really frail. This celebrity looks like they're ready to play, you know, tennis match. What decisions did these people make in their 50s and 40s that made all the difference to where they are now in their 70s, right? And Cheryl can actually say, let's check out these examples. So, you know, that would be an example of publishing something. You know, there's a famous book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Imagine that there was a book that Cheryl wrote called Fit 70, Fucked 70. you know, there's probably a better name than that, Cheryl, but we'll probably have to find out what it's going to be. But imagine that you publish that book and then people go, wow, okay, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Fit at 70, Fucked at 70. Wow, that's pretty amazing. I want to read that book and understand, you know, and it actually says the decisions you make decades in advance. What are the five decisions you can make decades in advance that make all the difference? fantastic. So we need to publish something. I wrote a book last year called Scorecard Marketing. And it was a book that I wrote because I wanted to own the terminology scorecard marketing. I wanted to be the go-to person for that. I wanted to erect an Eiffel Tower for scorecard marketing. I own several Eiffel Towers. I own Oversubscribed, Key Person of Influence, Entrepreneur Revolution. Every time I write a book, I'm doing it because I want to own the Eiffel Tower for that idea. So I wanted to own scorecard marketing. But what I did is I printed 10,000 copies of that book. And I just gave out 10,000 copies. I sponsored events. I ran Facebook ads. I sent them out to our database. It cost me about £40,000 to send out about £4 each delivered to people's, you know, delivered on average. That campaign was £40,000 to get 10,000 books out. I'll tell you what's wild. We can track about £50,000 a month worth of recurring revenue back to that campaign, right? So 50 grand a month. Would you spend £40,000 to generate £50,000 a month worth of recurring subscription revenue? And of course you would. So the purpose of a book is not to try and sell books. The purpose of a book is to give away books to generate revenue. The books should sell you. So look, you don't have to do a book. You can publish a lot more on LinkedIn. Most of you have got a LinkedIn, don't have a LinkedIn following. Here's a question for you. On average, in 2023, how many times a week did you publish an article or a blog on LinkedIn? Give me your weekly average for 2023. My weekly average was over three articles a week for the whole year. So you might sit there and go, oh, Dan, you know, you're a key person of influence. It must be nice just sitting there with the jet ski and all that sort of stuff. Well, actually, I also publish a bunch of stuff. You know, I get books out, I get publications out. As a result of publishing on LinkedIn this year, I generated an extra 25,000 subscribers on my LinkedIn profile, which probably turned into close to £1 million worth of business. Gavin, 5 a week. Yep, nice. And now top commercial real estate voice. So you've become the key person of influence through publishing. The sweet spot, by the way, Gavin, is actually 3. So 5 is great if you can do it, but actually the diminishing return happens at about 3. So 3 times a week is almost as good as 5 times a week if you wanted to do 3 better ones as opposed to 5 where you're forcing them out. Mitch did 1 in the whole year, right? Great. So make that part of your new year that you're going to publish more stuff. How are people meant to know who you are? How are people meant to know who you are if you're not putting stuff out there on the internet? I got to say this to you. We now live, let's just take a little tangent. Throughout the last 10,000 years of human civilization, we've had empires that have risen and fall, risen and fall, risen and fall. And the key thing about every empire for the last 10,000 years is that they're geographically bound, right? It's a landmass that we're defending, right? And the way that you build your empire is by having an army and a navy, basically, for the last 10,000 years. So you've either got an army or a navy to give you some sort of geographical supremacy. The latest empire, the new empire that's emerging, is a cloud-based empire. It's a digital empire. So it's an empire in the sky. It's an empire in the clouds. It's an empire in the thin air called digital. Now, if you're not, imagine that right now in this world that we're living in, we're moving from geography-bound empires to non-geographical empires, right? So we're moving into the cloud, which means that you need to own a piece of mental real estate. So what I'm hearing from Gavin is that he owns a mental piece of real estate called commercial real estate, right? So when people think, who is an expert on commercial real estate, Gavin's name comes up. Now, what's really nice is there's no geography in that. Someone in the US might come to him and say, hey, I hear you're a top commercial real estate voice. They might say, can we talk to you? The question I've got for all of you is, could you pick up your current business, jump on a plane, go and live in Thailand for a year, and your current business would not suffer at all? As in, like, nothing would change. It would obviously be a personal life choice. You would have to make personal decisions. Kids would have to be in different schools and whatnot. But from a purely business perspective, could you pick up right now, move to Thailand, and nothing really changes? The business keeps rolling perfectly, and you're confident that the business just grows, right? Could you move to Dubai? Could you move to Thailand? You know, provided there's an internet connection. Now, if the answer is yes, you've already moved your business into the cloud. You're already in the digital. And if the answer is no, then you're still in the dirt. You're still in the geographical empire. And the geographical empire, the problem with the geographical empire is that I can fish in your pond, but you can't fish in my pond. Those people who are sitting up on the clouds, they can drop their fishing line into your pond and pick up your customers, but you can't cast your line up into the cloud. You can't fish in their pond because it's up in the sky. So they're able to get your customers. You can't get their customers. They're coming up with amazing subscription model businesses that just come in and undercut you massively on price. And you can't do anything about it because they're in the cloud and you're not. So the issue that you're going to have is that over time and distance, if you're stuck in a geography, those who are not stuck in a geography will outfish your pond, but you will have no recourse to fish them back, right? So that's just how it's going to be if you're not in the cloud. Now, one of the things that puts you in the cloud is publishing stuff, putting your published content in the cloud. Okay, yeah, Cheryl, go for it.
Yeah, you know, this is blowing my mind. I'm loving every second of it, Daniel, so thank you very much for this. Just what I needed. Now, clearly, you don't mean me personally. You mean the brand having a personality of its own, because clearly I could drop down to tomorrow and, you know, or I could do a Gerald Ratner or do something crazy and damage my brand. So presumably you don't mean me talking, you mean my brand having a talk, having a voice and having a personality?
So I'll say something pretty controversial. I don't believe there is even such thing as a business brand or any of those things. I think that there is no such thing as a business brand or a business personality, or I think essentially...
I think you want to hug John Lewis, right? There are love brands, love John marks, Lewis, right? That you kind of hug certain companies.
John Lewis...
Love Apple.
John Lewis is currently dying a death.
Yeah, okay.
Apple.
Bad example.
John Lewis is going to rock the UK economy when it goes under, right? Everyone in Britain is going to absolutely be shocked to their core when John Lewis files for some sort of bankruptcy in a year or so.
Don't do that. We've got Waitrose in Daventry.
Waitrose will be fine.
Oh, okay.
But I think John Lewis is such an iconic, loved British brand, but it'll be... My shopping experience in John Lewis for the Christmas shopping was horrible.
Does it have to be a person then? Cheryl, does it have to be the owner of the business?
For 1 second, I'll get there. Think about the clues in the name. How did John Lewis begin and how did it have a meteoric rise? The clue was John Lewis. John Lewis grew it, right? And Peter Jones.
Yeah.
Who John Lewis took over. And then they were in competition with Mr. Selfridges. So there was originally just personal brands that the reason John Lewis succeeded is because of John Lewis's personal brand to begin with. The reason Apple is doing well is because Tim Cook did something deeply uncomfortable that Tim Cook felt really uncomfortable with, and he stepped into Steve Jobs' shoes and he became the face of Apple. And we know this because Apple has 7 million followers on social media and Tim Cook has 14 million. He's got twice as many followers. 10 years ago, Tim Cook had no followers on social media. Tim Cook was not the face of anything, didn't want to be the face of anything. He's a deeply introverted guy. He's a total introvert, but he recognized that Apple had to have a face. And we know that Apple has become the Tim Cook business, because it's very different to the Steve Jobs business. The Steve Jobs business with new products, thinking different all the time, radical change, disruption. The Tim Cook business is slow and steady and measured and understated elegance. All the things that Tim Cook is has become what Apple now is. It is a reflection and an extension of Tim Cook, much more than it is a reflection and an extension of Steve Jobs back when it was. So here's the thing. I'll be brutal. Those of you with your cameras off, right, you're making a statement of I'm not putting my face out there. I don't want to put my face out there. It's a really dangerous business decision. Those of you that don't put much thought into how you present online, right, now look at Frankie, nice recovery. Look at JP, right? JP, we know he's going to, like, here's the funny thing, right? I know that I'm comfortable in this room being brutal because I know what JP's a bit like. But I can tell already who is going to be a key person of influence in their industry because I can tell the way you set up your screen, right? JP has put a lot of thought into his background, into how he shows up, his iconography, the way he presents, right? The way he's framed, right? He's set up the camera so that it's in alignment at eye level. Right. So all of those things tell me this guy knows that his personal brand matters. He knows that he has to be presenting on brand. And you might be sitting there going, oh, but I'm in the coaching at the moment. I'm off duty. I know you might think you're off duty. Unfortunately, in a 24/7 digital world, you're never off duty because one stupid off duty comment could ruin your whole business. One stupid off-duty thing that gets caught on camera could ruin your whole business. You're never off-duty. You're always either building a brand or not building a brand or destroying a brand, right? So it's always happening all the time, 24/7. So, you know, the most basic thing that I want to just throw out there is microphones, lighting, backdrops, and never being off-duty. You are always on duty for representing the brand that you want to build. Bit brutal, but that's how it is in 2024. So I would love all of you, spend some time, get yourself, look at this, right? Lighting, spend some time, get yourself some lights, get yourself some, yes, there we go. A little bit of lighting, Gavin. Mate, you need a lot better. You're going to need a lot more than that, my friend. Actually, Gavin, for you, you got to turn the lights right down. You need candle lit.
Daniel, can you just share a few more examples of the personal followers versus business? Because when I first heard this from you, I was the same as Cheryl. I was like, I don't know. Okay. Not every face, every business has a face. And when you showed me, like, I think it was like Richard Branson and
Richard Branson examples. Richard Branson, 12.5 million followers. Virgin has 250,000 followers. No one really cares about Virgin. We care about Branson.
Then of course, just to add on to that, then when Richard stepped away, what did they bring in? Usain Bolt. Nothing to do with technology, just we needed a face. So now everyone associates Usain Bolt with Virgin.
So Cristiano Ronaldo has more followers than every single football club combined. So all of those football clubs are 100-year-old institutions. I'll give you another example. Elon Musk, love him or hate him, has absolutely torn shreds through the motor industry. And if I was to say to you, name the CEO of a car company, all of you would name Elon Musk. And then can any of you name another CEO of a car company? Right. Now, the only CEO that I can picture in my head of a car company other than Elon Musk is when Volkswagen was caught in the emissions scandal, out comes the CEO with a big, oh, we're really sorry, we didn't mean it speech. And it's like, fuck off. We don't know who you are. You've built no trust with us. You can't just simply step forward and ask us to accept your apology because we never saw you until such time as you want something from us. So therefore, we don't care about your apology because you're a faceless brand where the CEO coward only comes out when you're begging for forgiveness. And for, as far as I'm concerned, I'll never have a Volkswagen. And I may not have any of the associated brands because I thought that was so cowardly. So what we want to see is we want to see you be the face of the brand. But here's the difference, Cheryl. You don't need to be an influencer. You need to be a key person of influence. An influencer is someone who's trying to get the followers. They're trying to get the audience. They're trying to basically say, look at me, check me out, follow me. A key person of influence is someone who is representing their company. They're representing the brand. Now, here's what might happen, Cheryl. You might be the face of your business. You might also try and elevate your daughter as a key person of influence. You might try and shine the spotlight on her as the head of the business, CEO of the business. And what may happen is that as a result of people seeing that you've got the conviction and your daughter's got the conviction for this, you may attract a phenomenal influencer who's got 3 million followers who are highly engaged. And that person comes in and says, I will also represent this business alongside you. But the way things work at the moment is that the truly remarkable influencers with really engaged audiences, they don't connect with businesses that are faceless brands. They will not allow themselves to be exposed in such a way that they are essentially being the face of a brand that has no secondary key person of influence. So because of Tim Cook and the way he is a key person of influence, they can get any famous person they like to come and be associated with Apple if they want to. And they frequently do. So it's about making sure that very first instance, you are the one who represents the brand powerfully and with conviction. And then you surround yourself with people who are more famous than you are. That's where the power is. So I'll give you an example. The business Nike, that was founded by two guys. It was founded by Phil Knight and Bill Bowman. Bill Bowman wrote a book called Jogging, and Jogging was sold over 1 million copies. And he was considered to be the US's track and field coach. He was the coach. He was known as the key person of influence for track and field. Phil Knight was the finance guy. He was the CFO. COO, CFO type, and this Bill Bauman guy was the front-facing guy. As a result of Bill Bauman's key person of influence status, they were able to get all of these track and field athletes to represent the brand, and that became the momentum that they needed to go. Oh, we've lost Cheryl.
Yeah, speaking of to go, it's because it's obviously gone one. Cheryl 1 o'clock. Have to go to another meeting. Yeah.
There you go. So I covered all the key points that I wanted to. But I hope I've given you a little bit of razzmatazz to get you focused on your key person. I've got Frankie from behind the cam. I've got Frankie on camera, so
yeah.
I've made some progress.
Daniel, just epic session, man. I'll allow you guys to unmute and share anything you want to share. Awesome, Daniel. Excellent as always. Cheryl said she was absolutely gutted to leave. Obviously, you could see that. I just love listening to you, man. I love listening to you. And actually, it's perfect timing for me with being in a place right now that I want to stand for something completely different, which is essentially just the hero's journey and me coming home to what's always mattered to me, and that's compassionate living. It looked like coaching others in the beginning when I came into the KPI world, but really it was all about I loved myself enough to go after my greatest goals. And then I just got stuck in success and business and all these things. And I realized that actually, no, it's just compassion. Like I want to work. I'm going back to the I've tried many things over the years, but I'm going back to what, you know, I was known for, which is the oversubscribe model, working with 5 private clients.
Yep.
And then just like you said, stepping out of the arena, you use something else to really look at like AI and publishing and all that stuff. So this is so relevant to me. Lots of chats still coming in. I really appreciate it. Does anyone want to say anything? Unmute yourself. Daniel, you're epic.
As always, Daniel, brilliant. Love it.
Thanks, man.
It's funny. It was through you I met JP. I came to that event that you put on when he sort of walked up with a walking stick up onto the stage and like had to have help and stuff like that because he was his knees. I think your knees were still all kind of screwed up.
My legs were broken and healing, and I had like hip surgery and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I can remember. You struggled to get on the stage, and then you sat down and
on
you
a
gave.
Chair, yeah.
And then afterwards, you were signing your book, and I said, "I gotta meet this guy."
And look at us 4 years later, still riding or dying.
Well, there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Live Your Full Potential podcast. I hope that encouraged you to work harder on yourself than you do on your business, to work on your personal brand, to start getting more into AI and seeing how you can leverage it rather than be afraid of it or run from it. And saying all of that, I hope that allows you to move more towards your own full potential. If you want to see more episodes, please make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe to our podcast and our YouTube channel. See you very soon. Stay strong, keep moving, and never settle.